This is the Brain, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network. Yes!
Step into Alice's topsy-turvy world, where things appear to be what they're not, and things that are not appear to be. Based on Lewis Carroll's beloved story, Alice's Adventure in Wonderland is an experience to remember as you share the amazing things she sees and the wonderful friends she meets. There's Tweedledum and Tweedledee, the Walrus and the Carpenter, the Mad Hatter, the March Hare, the Cheshire Cat, the White Rabbit, and many more.
I'm late for a very important date. No time to say hello. Goodbye. I'm late.
I give myself very good advice, but I very seldom follow it.
A very, very young birthday.
To me?
To you. A very, very young birthday.
For me?
For you.
Little red butterflies kiss the tulips, and the sun is like a toy balloon. There are gifts up in the morning, glories in the golden afternoon.
Hello and welcome to the 83rd episode of Tooncast, brought to you by the GeekCast Radio Network. I am your host, Dave, Joe, and Mike, and today I'm joined once again by Kevin Optimus Solo Thompson. Hello.
Good day to you, sir.
And making his Tooncast debut is Pixel Dan from the Pop Culture Network. Hello.
Hey, guys. What's up?
Oh, not much. Today we're going to be continuing the Disney spotlight and talking about Alice in Wonderland. So, Dan, what's been going on with you, bud?
Not a whole lot. Staying busy. Trying to find time to do things outside of work, but...
Yeah. What's going on over there at Pop Culture?
Oh, lots of stuff. Videos and podcasts and all kinds of craziness, so...
Yeah.
Lots of things to follow over there if you're not already doing so.
Yeah. What's going on with you, Kevin?
Oh, you know, the same old. Podcasting and working at Behind the Voice Actors and trying to get more content up there, more credits listed, more shows included. Just added Spaceballs, the animated series, and the Lady and the Tramp 2 movie cast and characters up there.
Uh-huh. So I think we're going to be going right into it with the history lesson for Alice in Wonderland. Take it away, Kev.
Alrighty, Alice in Wonderland is a 1951 American animated feature produced by Walt Disney, obviously. And it is based, for those of you that don't know, on Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, with a few additional elements from Through the Looking Glass. It is number 13 in the Walt Disney Classics series. It was released in New York City and London on July 26, 1951, and like most of the other ones we've been talking about from this time period, it was released by RKO Radio Pictures. It's part of what some Disney people refer to as the English cycle of Disney animated films, which include Peter Pan, 101 Dalmatians, Sword and Stone, Jungle Book, Robin Hood, Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, and The Rescuers, so it's part of that group. It was made under the supervision of Walt Disney himself, and the film and animation are often regarded as some of the finest work in Disney studio history, despite the hostile reviews it originally received from a lot of people, especially in the United Kingdom. When was the first time you saw Alice in Wonderland, Mike?
Probably when I was a kid at some point. I don't know exactly when. I just found the film really, really wacky, just off the wall.
Yeah, it definitely would have that effect on you as a kid, as it did with me. I don't remember exactly when I saw it for the first time. I think it was with my sister, because my sister was a much bigger fan of it than I was. And I was always just kind of lost,
yeah,
trying to figure out what was going on. What about you, Dan?
Yeah, I, you know, it's... thinking back, I almost can't even remember watching that movie a whole lot as a kid. There's like certain parts of it I remember more, and I think it's because I had a lot of those Disney sing-along songs videotapes. So I specifically remember like the flower singing and stuff like that much more than even like the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
It's really, really weird.
I think the three main things I remember are the playing cards, the Cheshire Cat, and the White Rabbit.
Well, I think this is one of those movies where the characters are so strong that you remember the characters, but you don't necessarily remember the context or the story behind them at times.
Right.
Like, everybody remembers the Cheshire Cat. Everybody remembers the Mad Hatter or the White Rabbit or the Queen of Hearts or, you know, at least some of those characters. But it's like, if I can tell you all the characters from it, but I certainly can't tell you without, you know, having just watched it, how it progresses from one to the next.
Yeah, it's one of those really, really out there movies.
This seems like a movie that would never get by the censors nowadays.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
The amount of stuff they do, you're like, what? How could they get away with that?
Well, yeah, a little girl eating mushrooms, yeah, that would never get by the censors.
The dude doing the bong?
Yeah, right? The color of the bong? Yeah.
Oh, God.
I mean, it wasn't so much violent or anything, but it was certainly drug paraphernalia and references, et cetera, et cetera.
I was going to say, the whole movie's like a trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
And I'm sure for those people, I mean, I'm not someone that has had much experience or any experience with drugs, but I'm sure those people that have had experience probably love this movie to watch while they're high.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I'm just guessing.
I can't believe he said that.
So those druggies out there, chime in and let us know. just trying to get us some hate mail right off the bat.
We should preface for Dan. Later on in the episode, I will bring up a few good iTunes reviews. We had a really bad iTunes review because someone didn't like our Pinocchio episode where I made plenty of porn references in regards to Pinocchio's nose, and Kevin ranted on... What did you rant on? You ranted on something.
Oh, I don't know. I ranted on that whole thing.
Yeah, so there was this guy who left us a really, really poor iTunes review and basically calling us out and saying that, you know, we don't ever have producers or writers or anybody that want to come on the podcast. And we, in the previous episode, episode 82, we completely debunked that because we've interviewed multiple voice actors. We've interviewed at least a dozen writers from different shows. So yeah.
You call us a bunch of perverts.
Yeah. And I think our goal, or at least my goal for the rest of the Disney Spotlight, is to pretty much find anything off the wall and just out there for every single film.
Mission accomplished so far.
Yeah. We've got drug paraphernalia in this.
Done deal. Alice in Wonderland's for potheads. There you go.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Getting into the characters and the voice actors, let's see here. And again, I'm probably going to throw this to Kevin because just going down this list, I don't recognize any of these people.
Oh,
so far.
You moron.
Oh, okay, well, Jimmy McDonald, I recognize him because he was Jack and Cinderella and Mel Blanc. But
you should recognize Catherine Beaumont because she was Alice in Wonderland and Wendy Darling and Peter Pan.
See, I think back then when I was watching these films as a kid, I'll be perfectly honest. It's been about 6 months since I've seen this movie, so I haven't really watched it recently, so I never really got to see the credits or anything. So,
gotcha.
You know, that's why I don't really recognize a lot of the names.
So. Yeah. Bill Thompson's one of my favorite Disney voice actors. Besides doing Touché Turtle back in the old 60s cartoons, he was obviously the White Rabbit in this. He was Mr. Smee in Peter Pan, and he was King Hubert in Sleeping Beauty.
Is he a relative?
He's also five different characters in Lady and the Tramp.
Wow.
So, I mean, he's done a lot of Disney work.
Yeah.
Some of the other pretty off-the-wall people, Edwin is the Mad Hatter. I mean, that's one of his only roles that I know of, but he was pretty good with that role. Cheshire Cat was Sterling Holloway, who's a Disney god as far as voice actors go. He was Winnie the Pooh in The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, Ka in The Jungle Book, and three or four other characters throughout Disney's lifespan. So he's done a lot of stuff. Who else is in this movie?
Was he Hiss in Robin Hood?
No. Sorry. and I know why you're saying that, and we'll get into that later. But, Verna Felton, who was the Queen of Hearts, was also the fairy godmother in Cinderella, was also Dumbo's mom in Dumbo, Winifred in The Jungle Book, Aunt Sarah in Lady and the Tramp, and Flora in Sleeping Beauty.
Wow.
So she is probably the queen of Disney if Sterling Holloway is the king. Let's see. The other one I want to bring up is probably J. Pat O'Malley.
Mm-hmm.
Who was minor roles in this. He was the carpenter, the mother oyster, the walrus, and Tweedledee and Tweedledum. But he was Colonel, I can never say that dang guy's name, Colonel Hattie or...
Colonel Hattie, yeah.
Yeah, from The Jungle Book and the Buzzy the Vulture from The Jungle Book. He was Jasper Badden from 101 Dalmatians. He played six different characters in Mary Poppins. He was in Robin Hood, so he's done a whole lot of stuff, too. But this cast is a virtual who's who of Disney voice actors. I mean, also Thurl Ravenscraft and Bill Lee, obviously the famous singers that are in a lot of the Disney movies. You said James McDonald. Just a very good cast.
Yeah. Dan, who is your favorite character out of this film?
Well, I've always enjoyed the Mad Hatter. I just enjoy the whole scene with the Mad Hatter and the March Hare and everything is always a memorable one. So I'm a big fan of him. I've always liked the Cheshire Cat as well. But I think it's because, like, I think of the characters that are the most memorable, and it's always characters like the Mad Hatter
and
the Cheshire Cat. You know, everybody knows the Mad Hatter and the Cheshire Cat and stuff like that. But
yeah. I like... I don't think I could pick a favorite, but I like Cheshire Cat, obviously. I like the Mad Hatter and the March Hare because they play off of each other so well.
Yeah.
The White Rabbit. I actually like the Doorknob. The Doorknob was funny.
Yeah. This is a weird one for me because I never liked the lead female in Disney movies hardly ever, but I really like Alice in this one. Maybe it's because she's the most normal out of the whole group. I don't know, but I really like Alice. The other character that I think kind of goes unnoticed sometimes that I really like is the Dormouse, who's on the table with the Mad Hatter and the March Hare and is in the little...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I like the Dormouse, but I think Alice is probably my favorite.
Yeah. You guys have a least favorite, Dan? Is there a character in here that you just didn't care for at all?
No, I don't think I can pick anybody that I just don't like. I mean, maybe just... There's a lot of minor characters who don't get a lot of screen time that maybe just don't matter a whole lot, I guess.
Yeah.
You know? But I don't know if there's anybody that I just straight dislike.
This is actually one of the biggest cast of characters in a Disney movie.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, I mean... The 16, 24, there's over like 30 characters almost in this, and most Disney movies don't have that many.
Yeah.
I think my least favorite's the Queen of Hearts. I mean, I realize that she's supposed to be not likable, but I just really...
Look his head.
Yeah, I really just couldn't stand her.
Really?
Yeah, if I was going to pick a least favorite, I would probably have to say probably the Queen, but also, I found a lot of the ancillary characters, like the snooty flower and the bird in the tree, just all the really weird, wacky characters. I didn't really care for those.
Yeah. The only Disney classic movie that has more characters than this one is 101 Dalmatians.
That's because it has 101 Dalmatians.
Well, not all of them have speaking roles. Not all of them have speaking roles. 101 Dalmatians has around 40 speaking roles. And, Alice in Wonderland has 30. So.
All right, so getting into the behind-the-scenes segment here, a lot of the times, I'll continue to say this for the rest of the spotlight, rest of the Tooncast episodes that we cover on the behind-the-scenes stuff, a lot of the writers and directors I don't really recognize. I recognize Bill Pead because Kevin has mentioned him a few times. I recognize Ted Sears from something, but I don't remember what. What do we want to say about some of the writers or if anything?
Well, I mean, obviously Lewis Carroll gets most of the credit for the writing as far as being the stuff that they took everything off of.
Right.
Bill Peet and Ted Sears, I think, are... I don't know about Ted Sears 100%, but I'm pretty sure they're both kind of just legendary old-time Disney writers. Most of the other writers I'm not actually recognizing, except for Joe Rinaldi is ringing a bell with me for some reason. I know there was a group that did a lot of these Disney movies. I just can't remember which ones did which. But you're right for the directors. I never recognize any of the directors for these. Directors for animated movies usually kind of go unnoticed.
Yeah. Well, with the exception of Pixar. But anyway, that's a whole other podcast.
Thank God.
What do you mean, thank God?
We don't want to start any arguments between the two of us.
Yeah, let's not go there.
We have very strong differing opinions on the
on certain Pixar films. Certain Pixar films.
But if we start getting into that, we'll both get pretty riled up, so we'll avoid that.
Well, that could be fun.
That at all.
It could be fun.
What else do you want to say about the behind-the-scenes stuff, Kevin?
It's interesting the stuff that they decided to take from the book and the stuff they decided to change, or the stuff that they decided to just come in completely, you know, out of left field with new stuff. Like most of the stuff that was put out by Disney when Walt Disney was still alive, right. He was very much a TFG1 Mike Blanchard control freak. and he liked to be a part of every little aspect of the movie, and, you know, even after watching parts of it, calling back and saying, no, this doesn't work, or, you know, he's very much hands-on, so this has a lot of effects from that.
Yeah. Disney did not abandon the idea of making Alice feature after the enormous success of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, as Leonard Maltin writes in his History of Walt Disney Film Career. The Disney films, Walt Disney officially recorded the title Alice in Wonderland with the MPAA in 1938 as a preparatory work, began on this possible Alice feature, the economic devastation of the Second World War, as well as demands of the productions of Pinocchio in 1940 and Fantasia in 1940. Along with Bambi in 42, pushed Alice project aside. After the war, 1945, Disney proposed a live-action animated version of Alice in Wonderland that would star Ginger Rogers and would utilize the techniques seen in Disney's The Three Caballeros in 1944. I don't think that would have worked.
it would have been a lot more probably like Mary Poppins or Bedknobs and Broomsticks in that way, where it was kind of mixing the two, and I'm kind of glad they didn't work out.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Mary Poppins and Bedknobs and Broomsticks, but I don't think it would have worked as well with this movie. There's just too many animated characters that you couldn't, I don't know.
Would it be one of those things where, like, just Alice was going to be live action in an animated world once she came into Wonderland?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell. I mean, the reason it works so much with Mary Poppins and Bedknobs and Broomsticks is because 90% of the movie is live action, and they just kind of visit the animated world a couple times.
Right, right, yeah.
But this one, you have to be in the animated world the whole time.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that would really work. I don't know.
Yes. So getting into the actual show here, it's been a running gag on Tooncast where I have Kevin give us like a 5-minute plot.
All right, I'll try it. Without making too many drug references. But basically the whole story starts out with Alice and her older sister, and her older sister's reading, and Alice is bored and kind of is tired of being there, so she goes off wandering, falls down into a well, and starts a series of trippy events, starting off with her in the room where she grows humongous and then goes tiny and changes size and deals with the doorknob. Eventually she runs into, after she gets out of that room, runs into Tweedledee and Tweedledum, goes through that whole ordeal. At some point the white rabbit comes along and she starts chasing the white rabbit, which takes her into a variety of different things, including the Garden of Talking Flowers and, you know, songs and stuff like that happen there. The hookah-smoking caterpillar she runs into, the nesting mother bird she runs into, the Cheshire cat she runs into, and she eventually ends up at the dinner table with the Mad Hatter and the March Hare. But the biggest kind of climaxing, I guess, event is when she runs into the playing cards and the Queen of Hearts and that whole, I don't know if you want to call it a cricket match or what exactly.
Croquet.
Whatever they were playing. to the point
flamingos
where...
Flamingos and hedgehogs.
Yeah, flamingos and hedgehogs, and that was kind of an interesting scene.
Where's Sonic and Tails when you really need them?
Yeah. Eventually we come full circle. She ends up back with the doorknob and wakes up from her dream with her sister and goes back to wherever they were going, back to her house or something to have tea. So, yeah. That's Alice in Wonderland minus a whole bunch of trippy shit.
Yeah. In a nutshell, that's what...
There really wasn't a whole lot of plot here, folks.
No, there really wasn't.
A whole bunch of crazy crap. That's it.
Yeah, you're going to run into a whole bunch of stuff with no necessarily the reason why you're running into it, and it has nothing to do with the plot. You're just basically on this lost... It's like you are actually tripping. You don't know... don't know what you're going to run into.
So you watch the movie and you go, so this is what drugs feel like.
Yeah, this is why I don't... I've never done drugs because I've seen movies like this. I'm like, I don't need to.
Oh, wow.
I know nothing's going to make sense. I'm going to run into all these different crazy things, and eventually I'm going to come out of it and be back in normal land.
I think this is probably one of the only Disney films that we'll cover in the rest of our spotlight here on Tooncast where...
You'll have drug references?
No. Where I don't mind the crazy just not even having a plot. I mean, there really is no plot. She's obsessed over finding out why this rabbit is late. And is it even ever said why he was running late? I mean, it was to meet the queen, really, but I mean, what was he supposed to do for her? I don't get that.
You can't ask me important questions about Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah. There's no actual answers. Jesus,
inhale, exhale.
I mean, basically, though, if you're going to make a movie that basically has no plot, you might as well go all out and be as crazy as you possibly can to try to cover up the fact that you have no plot. I mean, don't half-ass it, go all out, and that's what they did. I just question the people that came up with some of this stuff.
So, Kevin, what was your favorite scene out of the movie?
Oh, good Lord. I think the first one where she's growing into the gigantic and then changing size by drinking the potion or whatever she was doing that's causing that. Like, I really kind of like that from the get-go because you're immediately thrown into this world where anything is possible and... it's kind of a little mysterious, a little magical, you know, fantasy-wise, and it really sets the mood well. And besides the dinner table with the March Hare and the Dormouse and the Mad Hatter, you know, that was kind of a cool scene. But I really liked just that opening scene where she's growing gigantic.
Yeah. I was half expecting... And I know that they were already set on the table, but when she was growing and then getting shorter and smaller and all that, I was half expecting some sort of question block to pop up. Punch! Ooh, mushroom! Grow!
I was expecting her to do something wrong and the Oompa Loompas to carry her off.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
Let's just get all the drug movies together.
They're practically the same thing, right? It's all the same stuff.
Oh, my God.
They should do a mix of these two movies. No, they shouldn't. Never mind.
Willy Wonka and Wonderland?
Yeah, forget the Chocolate Land.
Wow.
You could have had a river of chocolate going through that Alice jumped across.
That's
Oompa
true.
Oompa's on the beach or something.
I don't think when I conceived this podcast, I don't think I would ever expect anyone to make that kind of reference.
Holy That's God. What I'm here for. I'm in rare form.
Yeah, it's like shock beyond shock now. It's like Tooncast has become your shock value podcast.
That's right.
Oh my
not
god,
that shocking.
There's a reason that's the most. There's a reason this is the most listened to podcast we have.
Yeah, exactly. I think my favorite scene, honestly, was with the playing cards. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, that was a pretty good scene.
Was it the one where they were painting the roses, right?
Yeah, the one where they're painting the roses, and then they all end up doing the whole domino effect.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's about one of my favorite scenes too. That whole part right there with the painting the roses red and leading into the croquet with the flamingos and the hedgehogs.
And it was a great use of the Mellow Man or the singers with Thurl Ravenscraft or Ravenscraft and the other couple people. That was really good.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. Yeah, that was very awesome.
Because sometimes he's just in the singing background, and he doesn't actually get like a character sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of cool seeing him, and you could tell obviously exactly which one he is since he's the deep voiced one, the ace, I believe. But that scene was pretty cool. What about you, Dan? What's your favorite scene?
It's the same kind of stuff, like the painting the roses red and all the cards and everything. I love that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And the croquet with the flamingos and everything. That just cracks me up. I don't know why I think that's so funny, but I love that.
I like that a lot more now than I used to. I think when I was a kid, I hated that scene for some reason. I don't know why. I don't know if it's because I hated the Queen of Hearts or...
Maybe it was the animal abuse. You felt bad for the hedgehog.
I was like, wait a second, she's cheating.
That dirty queen. What?
But the flamingo that Alice had was hilarious.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
that flamingo was smoking something.
Just go limp. Just be like...
Yeah.
I actually really enjoyed the hedgehogs because she's like... She hit it, and the hedgehog is like, oh, I better go, but I better go the other way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's just fun how scared everybody was and intimidated by the Queen of Hearts.
Yeah. They don't want to lose their heads.
Yeah, even the king was like a little diminutive piece of crap.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just like those scenes a little bit better than the scenes that seemed weird to me was like the after she meets Tweedledee and Tweedledum and they go through that whole the walrus and the carpenter thing.
Yeah, that was too strange for me.
I was lost kind of during that.
Oh, yeah, that is, yeah. It's such a forgettable scene to me, too. You know, I totally forget about the walrus and the carpenter.
I was like, what was the point of that? That took way too long.
Exactly. So, Kevin, why don't you get into some trivia for us?
Alrighty then. Alice in Wonderland is the first Disney animated feature in which the voice talent was actually credited on screen with the actual characters they played, which is always something that I enjoy. It makes it a lot easier to tell who does voices. They didn't do that again until The Jungle Book in 1967, so I don't know what their reasoning was behind that, but there's trivia for you. Let's see. In the Walrus and the Carpenter sequence, the R in the word March on the Mother Oyster's calendar flashes. This alludes to the old adage about only eating oysters in a month with an R in its name. That is because those months without an R, May, June, July, and August, are the summer months in England when oysters would not keep due to the heat. I have no idea why I said that bit of trivia, but for those of you that find that interesting, you got some problems. The doorknob was the only real character in the film that did not appear in any of Lewis Carroll's books, so that was a complete Disney creation. This was the first Disney theatrical film to be shown on television in 1954. It was shown as the second installment of the Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color TV show, and it was edited to fit into a one-hour time slot.
Oh, wow.
So if it wasn't weird before...
Yeah, no kidding. How...
Unless they just took out the Walrus and Carpenter sequence and that made it only an hour. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. Anybody watching that really had no idea what was going on. What is this about?
That had to be a quick trip. Anyway. This is the only Disney feature-length cartoon film to have its first theatrical re-release after it had already been shown on television. So it was released the first time, then it was shown on television, and then it went re-released on theater. Early drafts of the script had Alice encounter the Jabberwock, who was supposed to be voiced by Stan Freberg from Lewis Carroll's poem Jabberwocky. But the sequence was rejected because it slowed the story down, and there was concerns that it would be too frightening. Really? They're really concerned about what was going to be frightening in this movie? Wow. Lewis Carroll wrote the riddle, "Why is a raven like a writing desk?" as nonsense. It has no answer. So even though people for decades have been trying to figure out the answer to that, there is no answer, people. The film was a box office flop when first released. Several years later, it became the Disney Studios' most requested 16mm film rental, though, for colleges and private individuals. That's kind of interesting. First feature film for which Walt Disney was able to use television for cross-promotion. So Disney's very first television program, One Hour in Wonderland, which was broadcast on Christmas evening of 1950, was devoted to the production of this film. So the entire program basically included clips and promoting the movie. So back in the days before movies were actually promoted on TV. Let's see. In the Walsh and the Carpenter sequence, the dates on the calendar are the same as they would be in March 2010 when Disney would release Alice in Wonderland, directed by Tim Burton.
Oh, so, weird. Crazy so, coincidence.
Yeah. And, of course, like most Disney films of the olden days, there is a hidden Mickey. In the scene where Alice grows and gets stuck in the White Rabbit's house, if you look closely at the dodo bird's flame as he lights his pipe, there is a hidden Mickey Mouse flickering in the flame.
Excellent.
So there we go. And the last one, during a break in the recording sessions, Edwin ad-libbed the speech where the Mad Hatter tries to fix the White Rabbit's watch. While Disney, who was listening in a nearby sound booth, saw that the recording tape was still recording Wynn's speech, he told the sound technicians, "Hey, that stuff's pretty funny. Why don't you use that speech in the movie?" The sound men objected, "We can't use that speech. There are too many background noises on the tape." Disney smiled and told them, "That's your problem," then walked out of the room. So, with much labor, the sound technicians managed to erase all the background noises from the recording tape so that Edwin's ad-libs could be used in the film. So that's all I got for trivia.
Now that you bring that piece of trivia up, that was another funny scene I liked, was with the White Rabbit's watch. That was kind of cool.
Yeah. There's so many little good parts. I mean, there's some parts that are completely forgettable and just get lost in the chaos, but there's a lot of good parts that you almost either forget or you have to rewatch and be like, oh yeah, I remember that part.
Yeah, exactly. So moving into the music segment here, the film soundtrack was first released on LP record. Oh wow, a lot of people aren't going to know what the hell an LP is. In July 28th, 1951, the soundtrack was re-released on audio CD by Walt Disney Records on February 3rd, 1998. The songs in the film include Alice in Wonderland, in a World of My Own, I'm Late, The Sailor's Hornpipe, The Cactus Race. These are some really trippy songs now.
Well, the music for Alice in Wonderland, it's not like any other Disney film to me. Like, besides the Unbirthday song and maybe parts of I'm Late, I don't know.
They're almost like they don't really break out into full songs in that movie. A lot of the time,
right,
she runs into characters who are just singing, or it's like, you know, they just kind of hum and sing as things move along. You know?
Right, like when she runs into the painting, the roses red.
Yeah, we're painting the roses red.
That's probably my favorite song, actually.
That's great.
Yeah,
but this isn't like one of those Disney films that just has this standout, like.
It's not like a Brand New World.
Right, or even some of the older ones like we've talked about in the last couple episodes with where Jiminy Cricket's singing in
Pinocchio,
or what was the one we just did?
Cinderella.
Yeah, like where they have I can't even remember the song from Cinderella now. I'm a retard.
Dreams Come True.
Yes. You know, where it has that memorable, like, number one, like, leading song. This one, they're all kind of similar.
Yeah.
They are, yeah.
Like, they're not bad.
I'm looking at the list, too, and there's a lot of them that I can't even really remember. And then there's a lot of them that I forgot about until I actually see the names.
Yeah.
Like, there was a lot of them that I do remember and actually really like, because, like we were the Painting the Roses Red. For some reason, that's one of those songs that will just pop into my head every now and then. And I'll just be like, all right, here we go, Painting the Roses Red.
Everyone's like, what are you talking about?
My wife will be like, what? Why are you singing that?
Don't worry about it.
Or like the whistle that they kind of do when they're marching along, you know?
Yeah.
That's one of those things that when you think about it, that's stuck in your head forever, and you're just doing that for no reason.
Yeah, they're catchy songs. They're catchy songs. They're just like, they're not bad, but they're like, none of them are just like out of this world great.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
They're all kind of on the same level of just above average catchy songs. But, yeah, I don't know. I think I'm trying to remember any of them besides the Unbirthday song and...
E-I-O-U.
I can't remember that. I do remember the Flowers singing a little bit.
R-O-U.
The Flowers annoyed me when they were singing for some reason.
Oh, yeah. See, I never really liked the Flower song.
Yeah, not at all.
But it's stupid because it's one of those ones I always think about when I think about the movie. But I relate that back to that sing-along songs tape that I had as a kid that had that on there.
Yeah, that's probably the second scene after the Walrus scene, the Walrus and the Carpenter. The Flower scene, almost I could have done without.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe they cut that out of the hour show, too. And, of course, there was songs written for the film that weren't used, as there has been in almost every Disney movie, that we could get a rendition of it in a future DVD release. I don't know if it was a song or what, but Jim Cummings recorded something for the DVD as the Cheshire Cat, and I think it was the I'm Odd song that was not used in the original film, but I know Jim Cummings is voicing the Cheshire Cat on the DVD at some point.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So they do that occasionally. I know Lion King did that, where another singer came in and sang one of Simba's songs for the DVD release that wasn't in the movie. I know they've done that for...
The Morning Report or whatever.
Yeah, which is...
Yeah.
The person that does that sounds nothing like Simba. But Disney's done that a lot of times, which is kind of a cool little thing.
Beware the Jabberwocky. They should have left the Jabberwock in the movie.
I never read
the original book, so I didn't actually know anything about the Jabberwocky or the Jabberwock until the Tim Burton one recently.
Yeah, I refuse to watch any of Tim Burton's remakes.
What? Well, you know, this one's not a remake. It's like a continuation of the story. She goes back to Wonderland.
I've watched part of it because Johnny Depp's in it, and he balances out the Tim Burton aspect of it.
Not to me, because Tim Burton uses him like a friggin' puppet in every single film. Anytime there's a Tim Burton film, fucking Johnny Depp has to show up.
I know, but he's good. And
well, I'm not saying he's not good. I'm just saying it seems like every single Tim... I mean, hell, thank God.
So why is that a problem? If he's good, then you should be all like, yeah, I'll watch this movie because Johnny Depp's...
Well, the problem is, it's like every single film Tim Burton has done almost, with the exception of a few, Johnny Depp is in them. And it's like, wow, thank God leveler heads prevailed when they were casting Batman and they went with Michael Keaton. Can you imagine Johnny Depp as fucking Batman? I don't think so.
Well, every George Lucas film has had Harrison Ford in it.
How many films has George Lucas compared to Tim Burton?
7 or 8.
7 or 8? More like all the, 6.
All the Indiana Jones, all the Star Wars, American Graffiti.
Wait, weren't those were Spielberg films, though?
Oh, but George Lucas was involved.
He was involved, but he wasn't physically directing them.
I know, I'm just saying. There's a lot of people like that. I mean, Scorsese and DiCaprio or whoever. I think that's a combination that... Yeah. Is it Scorsese that does DiCaprio, or is it another director?
I think so. I'm not sure.
That happens a lot, where someone gets kind of their favorite little actor. I'm not a big Tim Burton fan, but Johnny Depp makes it watchable.
I actually like that version of the movie. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, so a lot of people did.
I'll be that guy. Yeah, I'll be that guy. I liked it.
It introduced a whole new generation to the story, basically.
Yeah.
I guess. I prefer the animated version, because you really have to be smoking some weed to watch that Tim Burton version.
What? It's just as crazy. Come on. It's no different.
If there was ever a story that suited itself for Tim Burton, it seems like Alice in Wonderland would be one of them.
Oh, that's funny. All right, so getting into the legacy segment. Apparently, there's a lot of legacy information here. Where do we want to start with this, Kevin?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know. I was like starting with the Rotten Tomatoes. They gave an overall rating of the film as 81% fresh, which is pretty good for Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, yeah, but I mean, a lot of animated films, I think you've said this before, a lot of animated films don't get like really, really bad reviews. Are really, really bad percentages on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, but 81% is pretty good no matter what it is.
Well, true.
You don't see a lot of Rotten Tomatoes stuff above the 80% mark.
Yeah.
The motion picture received an Academy Award nomination for Best Scoring of a Musical Picture, but it lost to An American in Paris. I've never seen that movie.
I have no idea what that is. So boo, I call shenanigans.
I was going to say, the only American in Paris I really remember is the werewolf.
Yeah. Of course, it's been released a multitude of times on VHS and DVD.
Yes. The best version to get, if you can still find it, if it isn't already back in the Disney vault, is the 2-disc special unanniversary edition, which came out on March 30th of this year, when that crappy live-action film was released as well.
Come on now.
But if you have a Blu-ray player, wait a couple months, because in February of next year, it'll be released for the 60th anniversary.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yep. Blu-ray DVD combo February 1st.
Ah, then I will wait. I have not picked it up on DVD yet.
Yeah, yes. I have not either, so. Let's see.
Stage version?
Yeah, sure, why not? It's been condensed, oh my god, into a one-act stage version.
This is a TV show all over again.
Entitled Alice in Wonderland Jr.
Oh my god.
It is solely meant for middle and high school productions. It includes a majority of the songs. I don't even know if I can continue.
Let's move on because I was a D.A.R.E. kid. I knew better, but seriously.
They added Zippity Doodah to it? Really?
Why do we want to expose middle school and high school kids to a condensed version of Alice in Wonderland?
Yeah.
And then tell them not to do drugs.
Yeah, that makes
I don't understand.
Yeah, that makes no sense whatsoever. apparently, it was referenced in a bunch of other Disney films. The most notable ones I recognize out of here is a lot of the House of Mouse cartoons, like Mickey's House of Villains and Mickey's Magical Christmas, Snowden at the House of Mouse, Bonkers, Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Donald in Mathemagic Land, dude. That is one of my favorite classic Disney cartoons.
Nice.
I had that on VHS as a kid, and I think I watched that thing over and over again.
I mean, math is evil.
The whole thing was like a math lesson, but it was, you know, Donald went into Mathemagic Land, which was the version of Wonderland in that, and they did. They referenced Alice in Wonderland quite a bit throughout that.
Oh, my God.
Nice.
Yeah. That's funny.
And in Aladdin and the King of Thieves, the genie turns into a white rabbit.
Yep.
Yeah.
There were actually video games for it, surprisingly.
What?
Video game version of the film was released on Game Boy Color by Nintendo of America on October 4th, 2000 in North America. Additionally, the video games Kingdom Hearts and Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories.
Kingdom Hearts 2 and Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, pretty much all of the Kingdom Hearts games.
Yeah.
Disney's villains, Revenge, the Queen of Hearts, makes an appearance.
Yep.
She tries to cut off Alice's head, and Toy Story 3, the video game, Mad Hatter's hat is one of the hats you can have the townsfolk wear.
Sweet.
There's a lot of video games these days that are just paying homage to all the Disney stuff.
I know we're not doing video game, like a total video game talk, but I mean, you know, every time since we're doing these Disney films and I see that it's made some sort of appearance in Kingdom Hearts games. I love the Kingdom Hearts games, and I'm not a fan of Final Fantasy that much. I didn't grow up on playing that game or that series, but I started a couple of years ago. I found Kingdom Hearts, and I absolutely love those games.
Yeah,
I have never played them.
Yeah, that's kind of my problem, too, is I own the first Kingdom Hearts game, and I played halfway through it, and I've never picked it up since. But I liked it a lot, and I really want to play it. It's just one of those things where I have a hard time keeping up with video games, you know?
Yes.
There's so many of them, and they come out so often, and I'm doing so much other stuff. It's like,
yeah, I haven't had time for video games for a long time, but just in looking at some of the stuff we have at BTVA, because we have sound clips from most of the Disney characters from the Kingdom Hearts, and, you know, I was watching some of the cutscenes to try to grab stuff, and I'm like, this looks pretty interesting or pretty cool. Yeah. If I was into video games, I would give it a shot, but...
It's like, I want to play Epic Mickey really bad.
Yeah, Epic Mickey looks epic.
It looks so, yeah, for sure. It looks super cool. I definitely want to play that.
Yes. So we're going to go to some commercials, some ads, and whatever else. I'm not really sure exactly.
We're going to get a D.A.R.E. ad in there.
A D.A.R.E. commercial?
Actually, that's not a bad idea.
It's off drugs.
So we can balance ourselves out.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably not a bad idea. I'll have to see if I can find one of those on YouTube. I'll probably have Steve put in Singing the Roses Red or some fairly good song from the film. So, yes, that'll be coming up next.
Tooncast will be back after these messages.
Hey, yo, go, folks, while listening to Tooncast.
Rising Star here with some of my comments on Alice in Wonderland. So, first off, I have to say this film was definitely one of the more interesting ones that I watched growing up. And realistically, it was just the most trippiest movie I've ever seen. Now, when I was little, you know, I didn't know anything about drugs or any of that stuff, but even when I was little, I knew there was something just odd about this film. Now, the book was trippy, and to see it in animation form was even weirder. I mean, you got Alice eating cookies that make her gigantic, and drinking a bottle that makes her shrink, and then, you know, even when she falls down the rabbit hole, that is just, wow, I can't even really describe that. The film itself, I thought it was pretty well done, and I did enjoy watching it. It had a really interesting story, and it had interesting characters. I mean, to be honest with you, Alice wasn't my favorite character. My favorite character really in Alice in Wonderland was the Queen. I loved her. I don't know why, but I thought it was hilarious where she would be like, "Off with your head!" That was just one of the more memorable things for me, and that's kind of why I like the Queen of Hearts. Overall, this film was just, it was awesome, and I loved it, and I still love it to this day. Yeah, I know it's supposed to be a kids' movie, and it had a lot of drug references, but it was just awesome, and if you have never watched this film, I really suggest you go out and watch it or go on YouTube or whatever, because honestly, it rocked and it's a classic. That's all I'm gonna say on that, but yeah, Alice in Wonderland, awesome film.
This is Dr. Wily, and I will destroy Mega Man while listening to Tooncast!
Folks over at geekcastradio.com, and I want you to listen to it because it's the world's first Beast Wars and Beast Machines review podcast. If you don't listen to it, I will send my vehicles to remove your sparks and destroy you. So, from now on, you will listen and tune into the Beast Unleashed.
Do you like retro shows? Did you grow up in either the 80s or the 90s? Then tune into Telecast, GeekCastRadio.com's newest podcast. Join us here on the Telecast as we revisit some of your favorite shows, such as Clarissa Explains It All, Salute Your Shorts, Saved by the Bell, and much, much more, only on GeekCastRadio.com.
Sword of Omens, give me sight beyond sight. I see a new episode of Tooncast coming this week.
Now back to Tooncast.
So, final thoughts on the druggiest movie in Disney history. Oh, I'm sorry. Alice in Wonderland. Kevin, why don't you give your final thoughts?
You know, this is one, like I said, I wasn't a big fan of it when I was a kid. This definitely was one of my least favorite Disney movies growing up. It's kind of grown on me a little bit the more I've watched it and the more I've understood it, I guess, if you can understand it. Or at least discover the ability to just suspend reality and just go with it. It has a lot of great moments, has a lot of cool moments. Like I said, I don't know how they got away with all of it, but it's cool that they did. I think it's definitely the most unique Disney movie we've ever had.
Yeah, I would agree. What about you, Dan?
Yeah, unique is probably the best word to describe this particular movie. Just like Kevin, it's one of those movies that I think I've come to appreciate more as I've grown older, you know, because as a kid, I don't have any strong memories of really sitting down and watching this movie a lot or loving this movie or anything. I always remember bits and pieces of it. There's a lot of unforgettable moments in the movie like we talked about. Like, to this day, I still can't remember very thoroughly. I can't remember the scene with the walrus and the carpenter. I mean, it doesn't stand out in my mind. But there's plenty of other scenes in the movie that do stand out, and there's a lot of songs in there that I still really, really like. Like the painting the roses red and the Marianne birthday and all that kind of stuff. Those scenes they're awesome, and they're some of my favorite, you know, Disney scenes that I can think of out of all the Disney movies. They're just some of the most iconic.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I would have to agree. This is not one that I really remember watching as a kid. I remember watching it, but it I have a specific memory for Robin Hood. I don't have a specific memory of watching this film.
Yep.
So, Dan, what's going on over at Pop Culture? What have you guys been up to? What do you got going on coming up?
Oh, lots of cool stuff. Well, the cool thing about PopCultureNetwork.com is we've got, like, new stuff hitting the site every day, and we keep getting more and more cool new exclusive content pieces on there. So if anybody out there is a fan of toys along with cartoons, which I know most of us are, right? They kind of go hand in hand.
Exactly.
So there's plenty of great toy content over on the site. So you guys can check out PopCultureNetwork.com. Every day there's a brand new video. You know, we've got shows like Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, which is our Ninja Turtles video series. We've got G.I. Joe Disorder of Battle, which is our G.I. Joe video series. We've got That New Toy Smell, which is our weekly show looking at the world of toy collecting and action figure reviews, lots of cool stuff like that. So there's definitely something for everybody over there. You guys should definitely check it out.
Yes. Really quick, I wanted to bring up the iTunes reviews before I forget about them. Holy crap. Oh, yeah.
We need everybody to review the druggy episode.
Oh, believe me, I'm sure we'll get another iTunes review. just based on this episode alone. Oh, God. I'm actually only going to read one of the iTunes reviews for Tooncast, one of the newer ones, because the other new one is basically just a response to the one that pretty much made an ass of himself, because he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
And, whoa, called him out.
Hey, if he's going to present false facts about our site and our the way we do things, apparently maybe we're not getting the iTunes reviews because iTunes says I can't search for the thing. What the hell?
Boo.
iTunes. You unprepared bastard.
I was going to say, you got us all on the edge of our seats waiting for this review.
Yeah, I know. And iTunes is just being a complete...
You fail.
Yeah, I know.
Do you want me to read it instead?
Do you have it pulled up?
Yeah.
The one by Barbie Girl 213, yep. Whatever her name. Okay, yeah.
We got a review from Barbie Girl 213 on December 5th. She says, "So glad I found this podcast. I've almost caught up on the episodes and got to say it's my favorite of all the geeky podcasts I listen to." Smiley face. "These guys do their homework, know their stuff, and bring their sense of humor as well. Yeah, it's explicit, but we all aren't 9-year-olds anymore, so it's not a huge deal. I've heard worse language at family gatherings." Well, thanks for putting on an entertaining podcast, and that's a 5-star feedback.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us here on Tooncast. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter. The show name there is GCR and Tooncast. That is all one word. Mine is TFG and Mike. Kevin, what is your Twitter?
Boss KDAWG.
And Dan?
Pixel Dan.
Become a fan on Facebook. Facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. You can also go over there and become a fan of Pop Culture Network. I think it's PopCultureNetwork.com. Just search for that and you'll find them. You got that PCN voicemail handy, Dan?
I do. I've got it right here. You can call us at 217-953-4025. That should get you to our voicemail service. You can leave us a message, and we might use it on a future episode of the It Figures podcast or possibly even That New Toy Smell.
Yes, and you can call our voicemail line at 502-526-5821. Be sure to tell us the podcast you're leaving the message for and your name. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast. I wish you'll join us next time. When in the Disney spotlight, we'll continue with Peter Pan. For now, I am TFG on Mike with
Optimus Solo from BehindTheVoiceActors.com
and Pixel Dan from PopCultureNetwork.com.
Thank you for listening. Until next time. Well, that wasn't so much of a train wreck.
Not at all. Thought that went pretty smooth.
Yeah.